Nearly 30% of all women will develop a pelvic floor disorder at some point in their lifetime, but many don't seek help. They may be too embarrassed to talk about their symptoms, or they think it's a normal part of aging or postpartum, or once a woman has had children. You're listening to Checkup Chat with Evergreen Health, and we're talking today with Dr. Mia Swartz. She's a urogynecologist with Evergreen Health. Dr. Swartz, please tell us first, what's a urogynecologist?
Well, hello, and thank you for having me. Urogynecology is a field that fuses urology, which is surgery and specializing in the urinary tract, with gynecology, which is more women's reproductive health. This specialty was formally recognized by American Board of Medical Specialties in 2013, so it is a relatively newly recognized specialty.
People think it's a normal part of aging to go through some of the pelvic health issues we're going to discuss today. Let's start with incontinence. Is that a normal part of aging?
That's a great question. I think sometimes people confuse normal with common. So I would say that as people age, the occurrence or incidence of incontinence rises, but that doesn't make it normal. Sometimes I use the comparison of high blood pressure increases in incidence as we age, but is it normal? No. Is it common? Yes.
How do women describe these conditions to you? Do you find that they're embarrassed to discuss whether it's incontinence or pelvic pain? Are they embarrassed?
There's a lot of embarrassment and shame around these symptoms. In spite of them being very, very common, they're very embarrassing for women to talk about. They also involve areas, you know, such as the genitals, that in general, like, we also have a little bit of shame and embarrassment around, culturally speaking. And so once you get a problem with one of the organs, quote, down there, so your bladder, your, your rectum, your vagina, it can be a difficult topic to tackle. And it often takes a lot of bravery for women to even bring it up to their doctor, let alone, you know, present to a specialist like me to try to take on the issue and treat it.
Well, as a woman who's had babies, I'm certainly not embarrassed to discuss it with my healthcare provider, because it happens and then you want to wonder what to do about it. So tell us, if we know, what some of the causes of incontinence are.
Well, I like that you brought up the pregnancy issue, because I think that socially speaking, that is the first time that the pelvic floor and the muscles and the pelvic organs enter the medical care system, right? It's when a woman becomes pregnant. But that doesn't mean that's the first time she may or may not have an issue. She might have had an issue with her bladder beginning from the time she was a child or a teenager. So I want to acknowledge that out the gate. But clearly, there's a time point typically for most women who go on to have children where, again, their pelvic floor and pelvic health kind of comes forward at the time of pregnancy. And in fact, there can be a rise in symptoms like incontinence and other various pelvic symptoms after childbirth. And so that becomes kind of a more socially acceptable time to talk about it for some women. And in some countries, actually, it's routine for every woman who has a child to go through 6 weeks of physiotherapy, completely routine. In our country, it's a little bit more a call us if you have a problem. And so we have quite an epidemic of pelvic health disorders as a result. And that's something that I love to tackle with any age woman and any woman who's postpartum.
When would you advise women to call you? When do you say, if you've had enough, that's when you call me?
I literally say anytime. There is no amount of leakage that is too small. You don't need to wait until you're in Depends or even liners. If you're leaking at all and it's, you know, concerning to you, you should come in. And personally, I think every woman should go through some sort of an evaluation if they have any kind of symptoms.
Let's talk about some of the treatments. If someone does come to you and they've garnered up the strength to come and discuss this problem with you, what are some of the first things that you would try? We've all heard about Kegel exercises, or Kegel, if you say it that way. Tell us a little bit about what those are or what we can try first before other discussions come up.
I love that question. So with all of the mesh ads on television, we've done a huge disservice to women. And what I've seen in the last 5 to 10 years is that there's a lot of fear on top of the shame and embarrassment about many of these issues to begin with. There's also a fear now that if you come in to see a specialist like me, that you're going to get chased down for a surgery against your will, and that the only option is a, you know, vaginal mesh of some sort. And so I'm here to tell you that there are many, many options that don't involve surgery, and some of those are very, very holistic. Some of the most major things that we do are lifestyle modification, which can involve weight loss, fluid modification. Some women actually drink too much fluid. Some women drink too little fluid, and both of those things can contribute to bladder problems. So that's the starting point. The second point is pelvic floor physiotherapy, that rehab program you'd get routinely if you were a woman living in the UK, for instance. So bringing that in to make sure that the muscles are working properly. And thank you for mentioning Kegels, because that's what every woman has heard, is everybody needs to do Kegels. But it's important to say that there is a large percentage of women that actually can be harmed by doing Kegels. And so being supervised, you know, by a, you know, an appropriate practitioner before starting a Kegel program is advisable. And once you've tried all of these various lifestyle modifications, physiotherapy, then we can begin talking about medications if appropriate, and procedures such as in-office treatment options or even surgical options.
I'm glad you mentioned pelvic floor physiotherapy, because that's really a burgeoning field today. So if we've tried all of those things, and we've seen the commercials for some of the medications, what would be available to help with this?
Well, when we're talking about incontinence and treatments, you've hit on another really important point. All incontinence is not the same. When we as women sit around and maybe over a glass of wine chat with our friends, you know, there's this like, oh, I have that too, you know. But really, when it comes down to it, there are different types of incontinence and the treatments differ. So there's the type of incontinence or leakage of small drops that occurs when a woman coughs, jumps, runs, or strains. And so that's called stress urinary incontinence. And the mechanism for that and the treatments for that are different from the other type of leakage, which is getting an urgency to go to the bathroom that is difficult to defer, such that you leak or drops of urine escape before you hit the bathroom, and even large volumes can gush out without warning. And there's lots of shades of incontinence types in between, but those are the two main ones. So if you're talking about medications and ads on television, those are targeted towards the urgency type of leakage, which can also be referred to as overactive bladder. And when those medications don't work, there are other options such as bladder Botox injections and nerve stimulation procedures like acupuncture, style therapies, and even little implants that can regulate the nerves to the bladder. And you notice that in none of those options did I mention a mesh sling. In fact, that's a treatment for the stress urinary incontinence. And even that has more than just a mesh sling available to treat it. There's agents called bulking agents, which are silicone-based, that are little outpatient day procedures that can be performed as well. So again, lots of options, but they do vary on the type of leakage or incontinence, if that makes sense.
It does, and that's so interesting, the way that you just explained it all, Dr. Swartz. When does the discussion become around surgical interventions?
You know, it really comes down to the person's bother. One thing I explain to people is that this is not a field like cancer, right? There's not a, oh, this is a bad mole, so we're going to just remove it. You understand what I'm saying? It's not a binary type of decision tree. It very much is how much the woman is affected by her symptoms. I have women that are housebound because they leak two or three times a week. I have other women that happily wear pads, and they don't want any care for the problem, even after being educated about their options. So it's a very private and intimate decision, and a very personal one, if that makes sense.
It does. And what I'd like to ask you is that since so many women with incontinence don't report it to their physicians, do you think, in your opinion, physicians should take an active approach and ask specific questions such as onset symptoms? Should this be a part of a health and wellness exam?
In a perfect world, yes. And I would love for that to be the case, because this is not a rare condition. Realistically, as people age, and again, this can occur at any age, but realistically speaking, the older a person gets, the more likely it is they're going to have leakage, but then also the more likely it is that they're going to have high blood pressure, diabetes, and other things that overwhelm the primary care doctor in a medical environment that has increasing demands on them with less time. So that's where we come in. I would love to see screening happen for every person, but I don't think that would realistically happen. Where I actually would love to see it, and I think it could be realistically implemented, and something we're trying to do at Evergreen, is really screening every pregnant woman, because that's a touch point for maybe not every woman, but it is a touch point where we can really make a healthcare intervention that is meaningful for women in the long term.
As we wrap up, what would you like people to know about this subject, this topic, and what they can do at home as far as lifestyle, exercises? Should they keep avoiding diarrhea? What would you like us to do before we would come in to see you for incontinence?
I think the biggest thing is that if you have any trouble emptying your bladder, if you have any leakage, any urinary concerns, don't consider them to be unimportant. Come in and see somebody. And the same goes for pelvic pain, sexual pain, bowel dysfunction, any of that. Come in and see somebody. As far as what you can do at home, that's a little bit more difficult because that is tailored often to the individual's symptoms. However, what I want to say is a good intake of fluid is about 65 ounces a day. You don't want to drink too little and you don't want to drink too much. They can both be problematic. And keeping your weight down and sort of in a healthy age range is also associated with improved continence. And, you know, just staying in general fit and healthy, those things would be the top things. And of course, dietary irritants, like we love our coffee in Seattle, right? Those things are not great for bladder irritability and certain types of bladder leakage. So staying away from things like that, minimizing alcohol and carbonated beverages are also really helpful basic lifestyle changes.
Thank you so much, Dr. Swartz, for being with us today and for discussing so clearly an issue that women can go through and that they may be too embarrassed to discuss. Thank you for letting us know it's okay to discuss it with our healthcare providers and to come in if it's bothering you at all. Thank you again, Dr. Mia Swartz, urogynecologist at Evergreen Health. You're listening to Checkup Chat with Evergreen Health. For more information on the latest advances in medicine, please visit evergreenhealth.com. That's evergreenhealth.com. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.